माताय तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणय ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ गोइंग टू स्टार्ट द फोर एसेंशियल वर्सेस ऑफ द गीता, द चतुश्लोकी भगवद्गीता 10.8-11। रामानुजाचार्य हैज रेफर्ड टू दिस एज the four nutshell verses of the Gita, and that nomenclature has been adopted by subsequent teachers also of the Bhagavad Gita, and we will see why these verses are so significant in terms of their content and in terms of their context. So in terms of their context, in a sense, these are the last verses that Krishna speaks in his instructions, and then after this Arjuna gives an understanding that is almost conclusive. So till now, whenever Arjuna has spoken, first chapter Arjuna spoke, at that time he was speaking that the reasons why he doesn't want to fight. After that, whenever Arjuna has spoken to ask questions. And this is practically the only time in the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna paraphrases and rephrases his understanding of Krishna's message. This is the place where after the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita comes the explanation by Arjuna of the position of Krishna. And this sort of explanation does not come even at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the Gita has taken Krishna and Arjuna far away from the battlefield to a discussion of profound philosophical topics, the height of which has rarely been scaled either before or after. But by the 18th chapter, from those phenomenal heights, Krishna and Arjuna are coming down. And there Arjuna says, Karishye Vachanam Tava, I will fight. Because now the action is being called for on the battlefield. But here, after the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's message is rephrased by Arjuna. And there we will see he unambiguously declares Krishna to be the Supreme Person, the ultimate reality, the absolute truth, the acme, the pinnacle of existence. So that is the message of the Bhagavad Gita, and that comes immediately after these verses. So prior to this also, 9th chapter Krishna has called as the most confidential knowledge. This chapter also Krishna has said paramam vachaha. This chapter he says that I'm going to give the supreme instructions. And till now he has been building up by saying in 10.3 that this knowledge will free you from sinful reactions. And 10.7 he has said that this knowledge will give you will make you wholeheartedly devoted to me. Discussed in yesterday's verse, so vikalpena yogena yujyatena atra samshaya, without any doubt, without any delusion, will become wholeheartedly fixed in me. So then Krishna will describe this in the fourth verse. So if you look at the context, what is happening after that, Arjuna gives the only place in the Bhagavad Gita where he explains his understanding. Now of course, when there is Virata Rupa, in the 11th chapter, Arjuna does offer prayers and describe what he is beholding. But that is not exactly a paraphrase of what Krishna has spoken. So here Arjuna is giving understanding. So Arjuna is giving the understanding here only in the only place of the Gita. And before that, Krishna is building up by saying, this is paramam vachaha, the most confidential knowledge that I will be speaking. So therefore, from the context, it is very significant. Now let us look at the content. So when we look at the content, let us look at the summary and overview of what the four verses are saying. Then we'll go into the four verses. So in one sense, among these four verses also, 10.8-11, 8 gives a summary and 9, 10, 11 are elaborating that. So 8 says, those who know that I am the source of everything become enlightened, they become Buddha. And they become devoted to me wholeheartedly. That is bhava samanvita. So now this, that they become devoted and they become enlightened, that is talked about in 8. Now 9 describes how they become devoted to me, that is Machitta Madgata Prana. That is described in 9th verse. And then 10th and 11th verse describes how they become Buddha. So Krishna says that Krishna gives Buddha Yoga. That is described in the Dham Buddhi Yogam Tam verse, famous verse in 10.10. And then how Krishna gives Buddhi is described in the 11th verse, that I am present in the heart and I remove with the torchlight of knowledge the darkness. So in a sense, this is what the verses are talking about, how a devotee, how a soul on understanding Krishna's positions becomes devoted and becomes enlightened. So this talks about the redirection of the heart and the redirection of the head. So the redirection of the heart, the enlightenment is described in the understanding of Krishna's position is described in the 8th verse, and the resulting redirection of the heart is described in the 9th verse, and in the 10th and 11th verse the direction of the illumination, the understanding that comes up, that is also described. So now let's look at it from another way perspective. We know that there are these three categories in understanding God, or for that matter any subject: Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. So what is the Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana? Actually, Sambandha, the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Sambandha Krishna, Abhideya Bhakti, Prema Prayojana. So these are three aspects. Sambandha, what is it that we want to develop a relationship with? So by philosophical contemplation we understand, I want to develop a relationship with the ultimate reality. And the ultimate reality is personal, is Krishna. So therefore, that is the first step, Sambandha. Then how do I develop the relationship? There's a process of sadhana bhakti, that is bhakti. So that is the process which I follow. And after that, what happens when I develop that? Then the result is prayojana, that is prema. So for example, to understand this Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, we may consider a simple example. Sometimes there are advertisers, say, a person, as a car is shown, and the person is showing driving the car and says, enjoy this, purchase the car and enjoy the envy in your neighbor's eyes. Now actually, when the advertisements indicate the level of people's consciousness, you know, is envy something to be enjoyed? Enjoy the envy in your neighbor's eyes. So that is the standard of enjoyment that people have. There's no positive enjoyment. The enjoyment is in pushing people down. But anyway, so when a person sees an ad like this, the person says, oh, I want that car. So what happens? The Sambandha is with the car. Oh, I want to develop a relationship with the car. What is the relationship? I want to be the owner of the car, possessor of the car. So then Abhideya, what is Abhideya? Oh, I have to earn that much money. If I don't have the money, I have to take a car loan. So procuring the money is the Abhideya. And then what is the Prayojana? The Prayojana is I come in the car and I am proudly riding the car and I am waiting to see the envy in my neighbor's eyes. And then I look at him and I find that he has got a new better car than me. And instead of the envy coming in his eyes, the envy comes in my eyes. So what happens is, in material life, just when we expect the Prayojana to come, when we expect the fruit, the happiness to come, at that time, it just doesn't come. It just doesn't come. Or it comes, it is so little and it goes away after that. But the overall point is that this is how in any activity we develop. We want to develop a relationship. We decide this is the object or this is the person with whom I want to develop the relationship. Then there is a process, and after the process comes the result. So here, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. So Sambandha is Krishna. Now Sambandha is Krishna means we understand that I have developed a relationship with Krishna. So the first verse talks about Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana, all three. And in second verse talks about, the 10.9 talks about Abhideya as well as Prayojana. And the 10th 11th talks all the more about Abhideya. That means it talks about the process by which the connection is developed. So let's see how that happens in this verses one by one. But suffice it, at this stage we understand the significance of the verse. The whole philosophy is compressed together in a concise way in these four verses. So let's look at 10.8 now. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante maam. बुधाभाव समन्वितः सो अहम् सर्वस्य प्रभवो आई एम द सोर्स ऑफ एवरीथिंग मत्तः सर्वं प्रवर्तते एवरीथिंग एमिनेट्स फ्रॉम मी सो एक्चुअली वी मे से दिस मे सीम टू बी जस्ट रेपिटिशियस एवरीथिंग कम्स आई एम द सोर्स ऑफ एवरीथिंग एंड एवरीथिंग कम्स फ्रॉम मी सो व्हाट इज द पॉइंट ऑफ रिपीटिंग द सेम थिंग अगेन आई एम द सोर्स ऑफ एवरीथिंग अहम सर्वस्य प्रभु डजंट दैट मीन द सेम थिंग एज अतः सर्वं प्रवर्तते एक्चुअली द वर्ड प्रवर्तते इज ऑल्सो यूज इन अ प्रेजेंट टेंस इन द सेंस ऑफ मेंटेनेंस दैट मीन्स कृष्णा सेइंग आई एम नॉट ओनली द सोर्स ऑफ एवरीथिंग बट एक्चुअली आई एम ऑल्सो द मेंटेनर ऑफ एवरीथिंग एवरीथिंग इज बींग सस्टेन्ड बाय मी सो एवरीथिंग इज बींग अरेंज्ड एंड इट्स होल मेंटेनेंस इज गोइंग ऑन बाय माई अरेंजमेंट सो एवरीथिंग इज इन दैट सेंस एक्टिंग विद इन मी So earlier we have discussed the conception of God as deistic, which some people have. Now there is theism, there is deism, and there is atheism. Atheism is God doesn't exist only. God is neither the creator nor the controller. So theism is the idea that God is the creator and the controller. But deism is the idea that God is the creator but not the controller. God is the creator but not the controller. Say just like a clock is there, a clock is made by some maker, but it's not the maker is not controlling the clock right now. So that is the idea of God that some people have. So that is not the idea of God that the Bhagavad Gita very directly substantiates. It says that actually God is not just a distant, deistic sort of designer. God is also a proximate, personal overseer of everything. So he is present as the Paramatma in the heart and he cares for everyone. Of course, he is also a judge, Udasina Vadasinam, for those who do not want him to intervene directly. But for those who turn towards him, he is personally there. So Pravartate, that means Krishna is the sustainer also. He is not just the source, he is the sustainer also. And then Iti Matva, one who understand this, what happens to such a person? Bhajante Maam. That one who understands Krishna's position, bhajante. Now, Srila Prabhupada has already already explained the word bhajante quite in detail in the purport of 6.47. Yoginam pi sarvesham matgatenantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam samaya yukta tamo mataha. So, bhajate, bhajante, they are all from the same root. The word bhajante has also come, that there was bhajate, the word similar to bhajante has also come in earlier in 9.13. Mahatmanastumam partha daivim prakritim ashrutaha bhajantyananyamanaso jnatma bhuta dimavayam. So bhajante means that actually Krishna is wholehearted, that the devotee wholeheartedly offers oneself to Krishna. So it's not just some ritualistic worship, it is a complete offering of one's heart, one's self and one's very being to Krishna. So here, iti matva bhajante maam, person starts worshipping. But in what way is the worship going on? Buddha. Buddha means the person becomes intelligent. Buddha is actually, the word Buddha is related with the word Buddha. Buddha is the enlightened one. So Buddha is also similarly enlightened. And the word Buddha is often constantly contrasted with the word Mudha. Mudha is a foolish person. Bhava samanvitaha. Bhava samanvitaha means that with the emotion of the heart. So it's not the person doesn't do ritualistic worship, but bhava samanvitaha, with the emotion one offers. So samanvitaha, imbued with great attention. So bhava samanvitaha. Now, that means what is telling here? The knowledge of Krishna's position, what does that lead to? That makes the person enlightened, and that makes the person also attracted to offer the whole heart. So in that sense, the head and the heart both get transformed and directed towards Krishna. The head becomes illumined, that's Buddha, and the heart becomes transformed, that is bhava samanmitaha bhajante. So, now let us look at Srila Prabhupada's purport. The purport primarily focuses on substantiating the point that Prabhupada, that Krishna is making, that he is the source of everything, that he is the absolute truth. And Prabhupada marshals a remarkably impressive galaxy of verses as supports for this point that Krishna is making. So, we see Prabhupada quotes from various verses. Let's look at how many verses he is quoting from. So, this section is Atharva Veda, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. We discussed earlier quotations also from this book. So, what is it? It says, Yo Brahmanam Vididhati Purvam Yo Vai Vedansh Chagapayati Sma Krishna. So, it was Krishna who instructed Brahma and Purvam Yovai Vedams Chagapayati, and it is he who gave knowledge in the Vedic knowledge in the past. So again, the point that is being indicating through is that Krishna is the source of all. So now, what are the alternative sources that people may conceive of? People may think Brahma is the source, Shiva is the source, but here this verse is indicating that actually, if Krishna gave knowledge to Brahma, that means Brahma is not. So, Brahma is not the ultimate source. Krishna must have been there before. Krishna is more enlightened than Brahma, and Krishna gave knowledge to Brahma. So, then again, so this is from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Then Prabhupada quotes again from the Narayana Upanishad. What does Narayana Upanishad say? Atha purusho havai Narayano akamita prajaha sujyeti. So, So in the beginning, it was Narayan who desired to create all living beings, and then it is described when he said desired to create all living beings. What happened? Then actually, who all are created? Here we see practically the whole who's who in the Vedic cosmology is described over here as all coming from Narayan. Narayanat Brahma Jayate, Narayanat Pajapati Prajayate, Narayanad Indro Jayate. Narayana dashto vasavo jayante, Narayana dekadash rudra jayante, Narayana dvadisha adityaha. So here, Brahma, it's, as I said, it's a who's who of the Vedic cosmology. Brahma is the creator, Prajapati are the subsequent progenitors, very important people in the Vedic universe. Indra is the chief among all the gods. The vasavas, vasus are important among the devatas again. And Shiva, of course, Rudra, 11 Rudras, they are also coming from Narayan. And the Adityas are also coming from Narayan. And then Prabhupada makes the point, this Narayan is the expansion of Krishna. So, now, when this Narayan Upanishad is there, the point which is being made is that from Narayan everyone has come. Now, if we study the description of the universe's origin, which is given, of not exactly the universe's origin, but the origin of the various living beings in the universe, including the prominent living beings, in the Bhagavatam itself, sometimes different processes are described. So it is not that every time all the details within the process of creation happen exactly identically. There can be variations in different universes. That means actually, Krishna doesn't have to necessarily all the time, while unfolding the universe, follow a rigid pattern. Just as Krishna's pastimes can have some variations, similarly some things can be varying. So, when it is said that from Narayan, Shiva came. Now, if you look at the Bhagavatam, we may say that actually Shiva Rudra comes from Brahmaji. He is considered son of Brahma. So, how can it be said that from Narayan, Shiva has come? The point is here, that it is by Narayan's arrangement, and it is Narayan who is the original source. So, we may say that one person emigrated from this particular, from say in the India to say to Siberia. There are not many Indians there, and then that person gave birth to some people, and from then the dynasties moved on, and there are hundreds of people after that, hundreds even thousands of people. So then what would we say? That now there may be different generations that have gone on, but we'll say, oh, from him, you know, this king has come, from him this warrior has come, From him this business person has come. From him this artist has come. So it may not be that all of them are directly his children, but they have all come from him. So it is in this sense that it is said that all these people come from Narayan. Narayan is the source ultimately. But it is not necessary that these are directly born from Narayan. Although that can also happen if that is what the Lord wills in some other universes. So the Bhagavatam describes a particular genealogy, and the important point is in this genealogy it all comes from Krishna. It all ultimately comes from Krishna, because Narayan also comes from Krishna. So the important point that is being made over here is that he is the source of everyone. Now asrujyate akamyam. So it is said that the Lord akamyata srujyeti, that the Lord desired to create living entities. What does it refer to? Now we know that the souls are eternal. Then the Lord doesn't create any souls, because the souls exist eternally. So what is being referred to here? This is not referring to anything at the spiritual level. The souls are eternal, existing at the spiritual level. But this is referring to the beginning of the universe. We know that the Lord is sleeping. And then when Brahmaji's life also ends, at that time the whole universe is destroyed. And when the universe is destroyed, at that time what happens is that when the universe is destroyed, the universal substratum enters into Vishnu, and then after that, when the Lord desires again, then the universes start emanating from his body, and then after that he glances and the whole creation triggers off. So that moment when the creation is going to start, that is what is being referred to as Srujyati. So it's not souls are being created, but the souls are becoming embodied. Those souls who have already come to the material world, or are willing to come, or wanting to come to the material world, for them the Lord gives body. So Asrujyati refers to not his desire to create new souls, but to start remanifesting the creation for allowing the souls to play out their desires and ultimately come back to him. So that is what is referring to the Lord's desire over here. Now, beyond that, let's look at several other verses. Brahmanyo Devaki Putraha. Brahmanyo Devaki Putraha. So actually, this is from the Narayana Upanishad. Brahmanyo, so that the absolute truth, Brahman, is actually coming as is the Devaki Putra. And then further, what is being said over here? What is there at the origin? This is from the Maha Upanishad. Eko vai Narayana asinna Brahman Ishano napunagni samo neme dyav aprithvi na nakshatrani na surayaha. Eko vai Narayana asin. In the beginning, there was only Narayana. Brahma was not there. Ishana refers to Shiva. He was not there. Now, apo, so there was no water, there was no fire. And then there was no stars in the sky. And nakshatrani, and the surayaha, and the dyav aprithvi. So there was no moon also. So samo. Now, ime, samo refers to the moon, soma, moon. So like that, basically the point that is being made is, was no one there at that time. So again, now Prabhupada quotes from the Moksha Dharma. Moksha Dharma is like an appendix to the Mahabharata. Prajapatim cha rudram cha api aham evam sujami vai tahumam na vijani to mama maya vimohitau. So prajapatim cha, so Krishna is saying that Rudra and the Prajapatis, they are all created by me. But those who do not know this, but those who do not know me, mam na vijani to. So what is the indicated, what is the state of such a person? Mama maya vimohitau. People do not know this because they are deluded by my maya. And Prabhupada quotes from the Varaha Puran here. What does the Varaha Puran say? Narayana paro devas tasma jatas chaturmukha tasma rudro bhavad deva sacha sarvajnatam gataha. So from Narayana jata, Narayana is the paro devas, is the supreme among all the gods. And from him was born Chaturmukha. Chaturmukha refers to Brahmaji. And from him comes Rudra, and Rudra eventually became sarvagyatam gataha, he became omniscient. Now, what does it mean when you say Shiva became omniscient? Actually, there are levels of omniscience also. The word omni normally means all. So how can there be levels of omniscience? Yes, the word omni means all, but the Vedic universe is so subtle, so complex, that often the English vocabulary is not enough to describe the Vedic understanding of existence. So the word omni means all, but you know, what does it all refer to? Does all refer to all of existence, or all the universe, or all the earthly planetary system, or all the earth, or what? So all can refer to many things. Omni basically refers all. So Shiva is omniscient within a particular universe. Yamaraj is also omniscient similarly, in a limited sense. So it's all within a jurisdiction, but it's only the Lord Vishnu, the super soul, who is pervading everywhere, who is completely omniscient. So partial omniscience is granted to other living beings based on the particular portfolios that they have in the universal management. So to be able to execute the responsibility that I entrusted to them, they are given that power, and accordingly they manifest certain levels of abilities which most people don't have. So now going back, so now Prabhupada explains further that actually the whole Bhagavad Gita has been pointing towards this particular point which Krishna has made. So for example, it said that mattaha parataram na anyat kinchid asti dhananjaya, there is no truth higher than me. Now, that was one of the most categorical declaration of Krishna's positions. And now this is all, now there have been many declarations like that before also, maya adhyakshena prakriti, very direct. So similarly, there is this declaration, now aham sarvasya prabhavo. Sarvasya means everything actually comes from me. Everything means there is no exception to that everything. So everything literally means everything. Now when Krishna is speaking this, let's look at the overall understanding of how the universe manifests. So when the universe manifests in this world, actually we know that originally there is Krishna. From Krishna comes Narayana, from Krishna comes Balramji, from Balram comes Vasudeva Sankarshan Pradyumna Yudhiddha, from him comes Narayana, from Narayana comes second view of Vasudeva Sankarshan Pradyumna Yudhiddha, and from him comes Mahavishnu, from Mahavishnu comes Garbhodakshaya, from him comes Shirodakshaya Vishnu, and like that the whole universe goes on. So ultimately, from the point of view of universal cosmology, it is the Lord, it is He who is the source of everyone. So now Srila Prabhupada is quoting from the previous acharyas and explaining to us how all these things come from, all these are coming from Him. And then Prabhupada concludes this purport by describing that a Krishna conscious person should not be bewildered by fools. What are the fool idea? That only a fool would consider Krishna to be an ordinary person. So he should avoid all unauthorized commentaries and interpretations in Bhagavad Gita and proceed in Krishna consciousness, determination and firmness. So what does this refer to? This is Prabhupada explaining how we can become Buddha and Bhava Samanvita at our level. So Bhava Samanvita is determination and firmness, and Buddha is reject all unauthorized commentaries and interpretations. So the Bhagavad Gita itself is quite clear. Prabhupada would say that his purports make the self-evident meaning. The meaning is, Prabhupada would sometimes say that scripture is self-evident. There is no need for any interpretation of scripture. So Krishna is very clear. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. I am the source of everything. Now we know that what Prakashananda Saraswati and Sarvam Bhattacharya, both of them, basically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told more or less the same thing. But when these impersonalists, when Sarvam Bhattacharya especially, say, was giving his impersonalist explanation of Vedanta Sutra. So at that time, what happened? At that time, he first heard from Sarvam Bhattacharya for 7 days. And Sarvam Bhattacharya asked him, "You're not asking any questions. Are you understanding or not what I'm saying?" And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave what you can say is a iron fist in a velvet glove. Externally what he spoke was soft, but the import was very heavy. What he said is, "Actually I understand the Vedanta Sutra quite well, but I can't understand what you are saying." So see, what does this actually imply? It's like a teacher is explaining something to a student and the student says, "You know, I understand the textbook, but I don't understand what you are saying." So firstly what it means is the teacher is unnecessary, because the teacher is trying to explain a book, but the student is saying that, "I already know the textbook, I don't need you, without you I have understood it." But worse than that, what is the student saying further? That actually, "I can understand a textbook, I can't understand you" means what you are saying doesn't make sense. That means your understanding is improper or it is even incorrect. And that means the student is not only saying that I don't need you, but the student is also saying that you are wrong. It is quite a slap on the face for the teacher. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further says, "Actually the Vedanta Sutra is like the sun and your explanations are like the cloud covering the sun." So that means first, I understand without you, you don't understand, and third is that what you are understanding is a misunderstanding. So it's quite a strong statement. So now it is said that the Vedanta Sutra is like is self-evident. So the Bhagavad Gita is also self-evident that way. The meaning is clear, we don't need any interpretation. So if you don't need any interpretation, then why is Srila Prabhupada giving a commentary? You know, isn't his commentary also an interpretation? If the scripture is self-evident, then why do we need a commentary? So actually what is self-evident may not be evident to us. You wonder, how is that possible? What does it mean? Just like the sun gives light. Sun is self-luminous and the sun's light is going far and wide. But for us, over our head may be clouds. And for us, the clouds may be blocking our vision of the sun. Similarly, for the Bhagavad Gita in and of itself, its meaning is self-evident. But for us, the meaning is covered because of our preconceptions and prejudices, because of our misconceptions and our misdirections. So preconceptions means our own past notions. Prejudices means we have our own biases. We like certain things, we don't like certain things. So same, misconceptions means wrong understanding. Misdirections means our desires also. Not only is our understanding wrong, but even our desires are wrong. So because these preconceptions and prejudices, misconceptions and misdirections, they form a cloud. And what Srila Prabhupada does is, his purports are removing the cloud that is covering our vision. So what is self-evident is not evident. And therefore, what we need is the acharyas to explain. And those who are not actually living the Gita, they cannot explain the Gita. You know, to live the Gita, to actually understand the Gita, we must live the Gita. And to live the Gita, we must love Krishna. Because that is what the message of the Bhagavad Gita is. So those who are not loving Krishna, they are not living the Gita and they are not understanding the Gita. Because the Bhagavad Gita is not just a theoretical subject, it is a transformational subject. And without becoming transformed, we cannot get its proper understanding. So therefore, the devotee should not doubt. And with firmness and determination, we should move forward. And there are so many interpretations of the Gita and they may contain certain things which are valuable. Some points may be good in them, but overall, if they are neglecting Krishna, if they are bypassing Krishna, if they are saying that there is some reality beyond Krishna, then that is a grievous misunderstanding, and therefore a devotee has to be cautious. So Buddha means to understand Krishna as the Supreme Absolute Truth. And what happens after that? Let's describe in the next verses. So the next verse is Machitta. Now remember, this verse is, how is this going? Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. So Sambandha Gyan is Aham Sarvasya Pramatta Sarvam Pravartate. When you understand Krishna's position, that enables us to understand Sambandha. And then Abhideya is what? Bhajante Maam is Bhajante Maam is the Abhideya, to do bhajan. And Bhava Samanvitaha, with divine emotion, with pure spiritual emotion. That is the last part, that is the aspect of love for Krishna. That is devotion that is manifesting. So in this way we can understand that everything is talked about in this verse. So Machitta Madgata Prana. Machitta Madgata Prana Bodhayanta Parasparam Kathayantascha Maam Nityam Tushyanti Charamanticha. So Machitta, one offers one's consciousness to me. Machitta. Chitta. Chitta is the consciousness, the mind. Now Prabhupada translates this very aptly and poetically. He doesn't just say that the devotees think of me. He says the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Such a precise yet poetic translation. When we love Krishna, Krishna becomes our inner home. And it's like when we have a home that we love, then we may go out. We may go here, we may go there, but we long to come back to the shelter and the security of home. So similarly, a devotee may think about other things, but Krishna is the home of the devotee internally. And that's why the devotee's thoughts may go here, may go there, depending on whatever service is required, whatever practical needs are there. But as soon as there's nothing else to do, devotee's thought, come back to Krishna. Now all of us have some home, our own inner home. Now, for us, our home may be money, it may be sense gratification, it may be cricket, it may be baseball. There are so many different homes we can have, mental homes, whatever we are fond of. So if there is nothing to do, nothing demanding our attention, immediately our mind gravitates toward that thing. The whole process of bhakti means to change our inner home. We make spiritual advancement to the extent to which our inner home changes from worldly things to Krishna. So machitta, our home, Krishna becomes our home. The Bhagavatam talks about this also, this conception of Krishna being our home. Dhautatma purusha Krishna padamulam namunchiti mukta sarva pariklesha pantha svasharanam yatha. The same example, pantha is traveler, svasharanam, one's own shelter, one's own home. So just as a traveler weary after a long troubled journey comes back home and feels comfort and joy and love and security and happiness, like that, what happens is, and the traveler doesn't want to leave again. Similarly, dhautatma, one who is purified soul, purusha, such a person, Krishna padamulam namunchati, that person never gives up the lotus feet of Krishna. Why? Mukta sarva parikleshaha. There one is freed from all pariklesha. One is freed from all misery. So that is the way this works out in a devotee's life. That everything else may agitate the mind, but once we bring the mind to Krishna, the mind becomes peaceful, the mind becomes joyful. It's like if the room may be hot, if externally it may be hot, but then when we come into a room where the AC, suddenly we feel relief. Like that, when we bring our consciousness to Krishna, within the remembrance of Krishna, we feel relief from all the agitations and the irritations of the world, and then we can move forward steadily. So now let's look at this verse a little bit more. Machitta. So the three primary faculties of our existence are described over here. So machitta. Chitta refers to the mind, then madgata prana. Prana refers to life itself, that can be said to refer to the body. And bodhayantaha. Bodhayanta means to speak and to hear. Machitta madgata prana bodhayantaha parasparam kathayantascha maam nityam. Kathayanta, that is also speak. So we speak kathayanta, when others speak and we understand, that is bodhayantaha. They delight in enlightening each other. Machitta madgata prana. So machitta, that you offer the consciousness to me, then matkata prana, the whole existence is offered to Krishna. The devotee wants to live the whole life simply for the service of Krishna and for no other purpose. Bodhayanta parasparam. And the devotees come together with other devotees and they discuss, delight in discussing. Parasparam kathayanta shamam. And nityam. That's what one, devotees want to do forever and ever. And we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita demonstrating this. You know, wherever he would travel around. But when there will be some association of devotees, immediately he would sit and discuss Krishna Katha. And what he demonstrated in Gambhira, in his final pastime, in Antilila, when he stayed in Puri, was just this, Kathayantashchamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. At one, so tushyanti and ramanti, tushyanti satisfied. The devotee is satisfied with the bliss that Krishna is providing. That whatever I am getting, I don't even deserve that. So that I have got this, this itself is a matter of great satisfaction. I have opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness. I am satisfied with that. But at the same time, Ramanti. Now the word Raman is often used, Raman, like we have Radha Raman, Dika Raman. So Raman is often used in the context of Madhurya Rasa. So the devotee is looking forward, Ramanti cha. Oh, there is so much more ecstasy waiting for me in the future. So much more ecstasy. Waiting. So, Ramanti cha. In this way, the devotee goes deeper and deeper into ecstasy. And by that way, what happens is that the devotee's joy knows no bounds. So, this verse is describing how a devotee's life is completely transformed. The body, the mind, and the speech, all of them are used in Krishna's service. And actually, parasparanukathanam means the sitting and the discussion about Krishna Katha, this talk about the in the Bhagavatam also, that the joy of Krishna Katha is greater than the greatest joy in material existence. The greatest joy between two people can be the pleasure of sex, but greater than that is the pleasure of Krishna Katha. When two devotees who are like-minded and like-hearted, they like the same things about Krishna, and they have the same natures by which they can serve Krishna. Then when they come together, then the ecstasy that comes in their discussion about Krishna, there's no parallel to that. So, in this way, the devotee offers everything to Krishna and experiences great joy in serving Krishna. Now, after describing this, let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport. So, Prabhupada then gives the example. Prabhupada talks about the Bhakti Lata Beej over here and how Shravana Kirtana Karaye Sinchana. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 19, that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Actually, he gives instructions to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami over there in that section of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, there he describes this Bhakti Lata Beej. So initially when the spiritual master uses this beej, just as when the seed is there, it has to be protected and watered. So the water is Shravana Kirtana. The more we water it, the more and protect it, the seed grows and grows and grows. And when it grows, it eventually blossoms. It blows into a beautiful tree and then it gives out flowers and then it gives out fruits. And that fruit, actually the tree, Chaitanya Charitamrita describes, it goes all the way beyond the material world, beyond the coverings around the universe, through the Brahma Jyoti, up to the spiritual sky, and in the spiritual sky it goes beyond Vaikuntha to Goloka Vrindavan within that Goloka planet, and it goes to Krishna's lotus feet. And when it touches Krishna's lotus feet, actually that tree gives a fruit, it blossoms and fructifies. And actually that fruit falls right from the spiritual world to the material world. And then the devotee here itself, when the fruit falls, the juice comes out. The devotee kind of reveals the juice here itself. Here itself. That means that as we make spiritual advancement, we start relishing the richness of pure love for Krishna even in this world. Once the Bhakti Lata Beej is grown, then the relish that we get in our bhakti is enormous. And that is what is talked about over here. So, actually Krishna is there to give all of us the supreme ecstasy. And this is the one of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about association, and the joy of devotion is experienced especially intensely in association of like-minded devotees. Now after that, let's look at the next verse. Tesham satyuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam adami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So this is a well-known verse which Prabhupada would often quote. Tesham means those people who talked about in the previous verse. So now, just before I go to this 10.9, what did it talk about? It talks primarily about abhidheya, you know, how to practice devotion. It talks about machitta, madgata, prana, but then tramantiche, one delights, supreme delight. That is also talking about prayojana. It is describing the process by which one can attain perfection, and it's also describing the stage of the perfect being, so perfected beings. So in that sense, it talks prayojana also. Now these two verses will talk about abhideya. Now how will the devotee, normally the question comes up, if somebody, you just do bhakti, you just chant, dancing, you know, you have to have jnana, you have to have knowledge. So this was what, there was a criticism of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by Prakashana Saraswati. He says, you are a sannyasi, you should be sitting and discussing Vedanta with us. Why are you dancing like a sentimentalist on the streets? So at that time, what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? You know, out of his humility, he says that actually my spiritual master said that I was not very intelligent, so he told me just to chant. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed him how intelligent he was. Now, there was a discussion, a debate, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demolished all the false explanations of Vedanta that Prakashana Saraswati had given and enlightened and converted Prakashana Saraswati at that time. So it is not that devotees don't have intelligence, but people think like that. So Krishna is assuring here, how will the devotee become enlightened? He says, I will give that intelligence. Tesham satat yuktanam. So he's not saying that they have to be very buddhiman, they have to do vimarshan, they have to be very intelligent, or they have to do a lot of deliberation. No, satat yuktanam. Let them be just engaged in devotional service. Satat yuktanam. And how? Bhajitam priti purvakam. Bhajitam priti purvakam. Let them be engaged with devotion, with affectionate attitude, priti purvakam. And not so affectionately, not resentfully, not grudgingly. So actually, bhakti can give us illumination if we do it with an affectionate attitude. If we do it with a resentful attitude, then we prevent Krishna from giving us the gift that he wants to give us. Dami buddhi yogam tam. And what happens? Dami. Krishna says, I will give what? Buddhi yoga. I will give you the knowledge by which you can come to me, the intelligence by which you can come to me. Yena mam upayanti te, by which you will come to me. And this buddhi yoga is a compound word. Now buddhi and yoga. And this has been used earlier by Krishna in the second chapter. In verse 2.39, Esha te bhita sankhe buddhir yoge tu imam shrunu buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandhan prahasyasi. So buddhir yoge tu imam shrunu. So Krishna used the word buddhi yoga. There, although the words are the same, there buddhi yoga primarily refers to acting intelligently for the purpose of yoga. So, but there, when Krishna had used the word, Krishna had not talked about himself so much. So there, if you look at the context, it just refers, okay, you have got the knowledge that you are not the body or the soul. Now hack how to act with that knowledge so that one can do yoga. One can connect, one can connect with the higher spiritual reality. So what that higher spiritual reality was not known at that point. But here Krishna is telling that higher spirituality is clearly established, that it is I who am that higher spiritual reality. And he, highest spiritual, not higher, but the highest spirituality. Aham sarvasya prabhu. Mattaha parataram nanyat kinchita siddhananjaya. 7.7, 10.10, Krishna has talked about all this. Now, what is he talking about here? Here he is talking about that one who understands. So he is saying that I am the supreme truth and I give the knowledge by which what will happen? Again, you will come back to me. Yena mam upayanti te. So, it is not that by that knowledge something else will happen. See, this verse is so clearly and consistently devotional. These set of verses, and this causes a lot of headaches for Mayavadis. You know, the Mayavadis, they somehow want to bring about their impersonalist interpretation. So what they try to say is that actually, see, here Krishna is telling from bhakti, buddhi will come. Therefore, buddhi is higher than bhakti. I say, when you have bhakti, how to yuktanam, then what will happen? Buddhi will come. And the buddhi means jnana. And jnana is used for impersonal merging. But this is completely unwarranted explanation, because Krishna is telling what is the result of that buddhi. Dhami buddhi yogam tam, by which yenamam upayanti te, by which you will come to me. Krishna is not saying that I will give you the buddhi by which you will go to Brahman or some other reality beyond me. He says, no, you will come to me. Yenamam upayanti te, by which you will come to me. Tadami buddhi yogam tam, so I give the buddhi yoga. So Krishna is telling that even if you are deficient in knowledge, doesn't matter, I will provide that knowledge. So buddhi yoga, this compound word can be understood too, is the buddhi that helps us to do yoga, or the yoga that grants buddhi. Let's look at these two. The buddhi that helps us to do yoga, that means yoga means connection with Krishna, connection with the absolute truth, who is Krishna. So buddhi yoga will mean the buddhi that enables us to do yoga. Krishna gives the intelligence. How should I serve? You know, I'm in this situation now. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Let me accept what is favorable, let me reject that which is unfavorable. So how do I do all this? That buddhi, Krishna says, I will give. That buddhi for doing yoga. So buddhi for doing yoga is buddhi yoga. Or you could also have yoga that gives buddhi. So when we do yoga, that means when we try to practice bhakti, when we engage in devotional service, by that itself, buddhi comes along. So in the Bhagavatam also it said that if one just keeps Shunvatam Sukatha Krishna, if one hears about Krishna and Shushushraddha Dhanasya, in the first canto, second chapter, verses 6 to 21, there is a series of verses that describes how we become purified with the process of bhakti, and describe that by that process itself, what happens? We understand the science of Krishna. Tam sattve prasidati evam prasanna manaso bhagvat bhakti yogatah bhagvat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. So evam prasanna manaso, when one with the prasanna, so it's described that by the practice of bhakti one becomes purified and then one becomes joyful by that. Tam sattve prasidati, when one is a jurans toguna, one becomes joy, cheerful, because the hankering that make us miserable go away. And then the prasanna manaso is similar here to bhajatam priti purvaka, one has cheerful disposition, affectionate disposition. So evam prasanna manaso bhagvat bhakti yogataha, when one engages in bhakti yoga, then what happens to the Supreme Lord? Bhagvat tattva vijnanam, that the science of the Bhagavad Tattva, science of Krishna, becomes manifest to us, and then mukta sangasya jayate, one becomes free from all attachments, all bondage. And then it's like when we become detached from worldly bondage, we have already come to know about Krishna, we understood Krishna, and naturally we become attracted to Krishna. So that same point is said over here, yenamam upayanti te, by this the devotee will come back to me. So here Krishna is telling that the devotee primarily has to engage in devotional service. And the devotee engages in devotional service, Krishna says, I will provide whatever is required. It's not that you have to do anything separately. Yeah. So Prabhupada explains, one should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, and the path slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. So what is the most important thing? At the very foundational level, we need to know what is the goal. And then the scriptures give an overall path, and when we start going along that path itself is rendering devotional service. Then Krishna gives the influence from within, and the path becomes more and more clear. And one keeps moving forward that way. Then Prabhupada explains further that that sometimes a devotee may not be intelligent enough. If he is A devotee may have a spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instruction so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. So the point here is that the focus should be on service. Now for us, when we study scripture also, you know, we are not interested in intellectual study of scripture alone for its own sake. We want to study scripture so that we can develop our love for Krishna. And a devotee studies Krishna, study the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it is not to just intellectually scrutinize Krishna. It is to intellectually submit to Krishna. That means it is to use our intelligence in the service of Krishna. We don't place our intelligence on the altar above Krishna. With my intelligence, I look down and I examine Krishna. This doesn't make sense. This makes sense. This is right. It's not right. No, that's not a devotee's attitude. Devotee's attitude is that actually Krishna is above and Krishna has given me various faculties. One of the faculties is intelligence. So those devotees who have intellectual tendency, they should use it in Krishna's service. And Srila Prabhupada said that that chanting and remembering Krishna will purify us and will take us back to God. But still he wrote so many books. And he wanted devotees to study because the studying removes our misconceptions and it increases our conviction by which we can go back to Krishna. Now Krishna has described it, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, I'll give the Buddhi. Now somebody may ask the question, how will Krishna give the Buddhi? That is said in the next verse. Tesham evanukam partham aham ajnana jantamaha nashayamyatma bhavastho jnana deepena bhasvata Tesham eva anukampa partha. So what will happen for them? Anukampa, then on them I show special mercy. Anukampa means special mercy. Aham ajnana jantamaha. So the born of ignorance, whatever darkness is there, nashayami atma bhavastho. Atma bhavastho, I am situated in their heart, and nashayami, I will destroy it. How? Jnana deepena bhasvata, by the torchlight of knowledge. So here Krishna is using a metaphor. When there is darkness, the torchlight is there, torchlight will remove darkness. So you know, when power goes off, we immediately feel, oh, there's darkness all around. So we start to look, where is the candle, where is the torch? Maybe my mobile has a flashlight. We try to get some source of light and then we start moving around. Now when darkness comes up, it confuses us, it even paralyzes us, we can't do anything. So we try to keep our outer world lit carefully. But we don't think about our inner world. Our inner world is enveloped in a blinding and binding darkness. Blinding means we can really see anything. Binding means, you know, from that darkness, suddenly some nasty desire comes up, some negative feeling comes up, suddenly some nagging doubt comes up. And what does this do? This troubles us, it torments us, it drains us, and ultimately can even defeat us. So our inner world is shrouded with darkness. That means we don't know what is good for us, what is bad for us, what is there inside us. Ultimately, we are the soul, we don't know that there is that Krishna is there in the heart, we don't know that. See, inside whatever emotions come, we don't even know what all is there in our heart. And how the emotions, when they come, we can't easily identify that they are our enemies. Whatever comes from within us, we think, oh, it's my emotion, and therefore I must act on it. But no, inside us also, there is a soul, we are the souls, but along with that, there is a mind also. The mind is filled with so much contamination. So therefore, it's not that whatever comes out of us is out of me, is me. You know, it could be not me, but something which is masking itself and pretending to be me. So our inner world is shrouded with darkness. So it is not that a devotee has to do some exhaustive intellectual analysis to remove this darkness. The devotee simply practices devotional service and Krishna removes that darkness. Krishna ignites the light that makes the inner world bright and right. Bright and right. So when Krishna illumines, then we understand, oh, these desires which promise pleasure, they are actually traitors. These material desires, they are promising pleasure, but they will actually make me miserable. I will not indulge in those desires. And then, yes, these devotional desires, this is what I should cultivate. They are my friends. I should nourish them. And they will as I nourish them, my bhakti, my priti for Krishna will increase more and more, and ultimately I'll return back to him. So Krishna makes our inner world bright and right. Right means he helps us understand this is good, this is bad, this is what I should do, this is what I should not do. And in that way we can move forward in devotional service. So Prabhupada also quotes over here that how some people think that devotees are not very intelligent. But Jiva Goswami, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, these are all extraordinary scholars and they were all devotees. So it is not that a devotee is unintelligent. A devotee is supremely intelligent. E Krishna Bhaje Sei Bada Chatur. And then Prabhupada explains how Krishna removes the darkness as the sun removes the darkness. And then as the Lord takes charge of a devotee's heart, the one becomes completely free from all kinds of materialistic endeavors, Prabhupada says, and one marches back to Krishna steadily. So in these four verses, Krishna not only demonstrates his supreme position, but along with that, he also demonstrates his benevolent disposition. That I care. If you just want to love me, I'll care for you so much that I will personally intervene and I will give you all the intelligence by which you will come back to me. So by just this demonstrating through these verses his love for Krishna, his love for his devotees, Krishna is making a call to us. Don't worry, just follow me. I will provide you everything. Just offer your love to me. So what is Arjuna's response? We'll discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.